Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The program today is focused on the new report by the Onondaga Citizens League titled, The State of the Community Engagement Infrastructure of Central New York. Each year, the League publishes a report based on a year-long study and writing process. My two guests were heavily involved in the report and also serve on the League's board. Tom Carlin is president of Technical Workplace Consulting, an IT infrastructure support company. Tina Nabachi is a professor of public administration and international affairs at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. Tina, Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
Tom, let me start with you. And the report's about community engagement. That is obviously a very broad term. What are you getting at there in the report? How did you narrow the topic enough to get your arms around it and study it?
Well, yeah, we struggled with this a lot at the very beginning of this project. One of our biggest issues was, right, how do you define community engagement? You know, there was a lot of discussion about civic engagement versus community engagement versus, just all kinds of different ways that people become engaged. And we also had to struggle with the idea that, okay, our studies are very limited in scope. I mean, basically, we're a volunteer organization. You know, we're relying on people to, you know, use their spare time to help us. Our studies, the data collection lasts only about 8 months max. So we had a very limited amount of time, very limited amount of people to use to actually get this report together. So obviously, then we had to start winnowing down the whole idea of what we're going to look at. Now, when we started thinking about community engagement versus civic engagement, there was this whole idea, well, civic engagement is, you know, how you interact with the government. Mm-hmm. And community engagement is how you interact with the community. And for a lot of people, for some people, that makes a whole lot of sense. But when we started talking to actual individuals, they did not differentiate that way. You know, for them, community engagement was how do you interact with anyone outside of your house, basically.
Getting involved.
Right, yeah. Right. And that may include, you know, helping your neighbors. It may include helping some NGO. But it also could include, you know, how do you interact with your government and how do you interact with your local politician and that kind of thing. So that was our first thing. Our decision was, let's not try to, you know, get too in the weeds about this definition. You know, community engagement, as far as we were concerned, was community engagement. It was, you know, it was any kind of engagement. That said, though, we also realized that, you know, this is a huge, huge subject. And we weren't going to be able to even scratch the surface in our short period of time if we tried to encompass everything. So we decided, okay, if we aren't going to be able to look at every single aspect of community engagement, let's try to focus on certain kinds of community engagement. So that's why we didn't look at what I call retail community engagement, which is, Make-A-Wish Foundation and Meals on Wheels, Boy Scouts. I mean, you know, your local Little League, that kind of thing. I mean, those are all great ways to engage the community, but they're very focused on individuals. So we decided, okay, we're going to look at what we consider to be those organizations that try to make an impact on the wider community, wider mm-hmm. society. Mm-hmm. And so that helped us focus a little bit. It did narrow it down quite a bit. But we also had to realize that even then, you know, there are so many aspects of what these organizations do that we couldn't simply say, okay, we're just going to look at this one thing, you know, this one segment and just look at everything about this one segment. So we still had to focus, we had to narrow it down some more. So that's basically what we did.
And Tina, you, I know that you study different kinds of public participation in political mm-hmm. life and deliberative democracy. So what aspect of engagement that wasn't included in the report's purview that you would have most wanted to include, given what you do?
As Tom was saying, the idea of civic engagement is huge. It's this incredible umbrella term that encompasses so many different ways that people come together and try to have an impact in their communities. For me, I think the piece that I would have liked to have seen is a little bit more of the direct connection to government and how citizens can have a more direct voice in what's happening in the local community in between elections. But the report covers a huge variety of ways that people are coming together and making a difference on public matters and public issues that affect people's lives here in Syracuse and in Onondaga County. And so overall, I'm very pleased with what came out in the report.
And what would you regard as the report's key findings, the study's key findings there?
I think the key findings that there is a lot of engagement that's happening, engagement in places that we wouldn't necessarily think of immediately off the top of our head, but that there are often challenges in connecting these pieces so that the engagement is happening often sporadically or in one-off situations. And one of the things we need to try to do in our community, if we can, is to build the connections between that so that we're strengthening strengthening our infrastructure for participation and engagement. So drawing the connections between the pieces, I think, will be really important as we move forward.
Was that part of the reason for the title of the report? I mean, I'm not meaning this as a criticism, Tom, but it's a bit of a mouthful. Is that why infrastructure made it in there?
I think so.
I didn't know that. That was Stephanie Miner maybe in there with infrastructure. I'm not sure. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. We didn't want to have a report that simply said, let's talk about community engagement because, again, it's too vast a structure. So it was a vast subject. But I think by putting that infrastructure in there, we were saying, let's look at the underlying aspects of what drives community engagement.
And, it's interesting that you say that because I've been in conversations with other community leaders of nonprofit organizations. And the same thing is said, particularly about Syracuse, that there are a lot of them, but the interconnections, the interstitial glue there is kind of weak. And so it sounds like you're saying a similar thing about community engagement.
I think that's right, and I don't think the problem is just limited to Syracuse. I think this is a problem we're facing in communities all across the country and all across the world. How do we start moving from one-off, sporadic, individual kind of exercises to a way where participation is sustained? So we're creating multiple opportunities for people to come together over time to address public matters and issues.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Tina Nabachi and Tom Carlin from the Onondaga Citizens League. Back to the findings and things that you found or didn't find. I was curious: are there any geographic patterns in the county that you found particularly interesting or of note in terms of engagement?
I don't know if you would call it geographic. I suppose you could. What we found was that obviously we have. We have different communities. We have, we have a refugee community. We have an immigrant community. We have, communities of color. And while some of those are obviously geographically centric, what we did find when we talked to those communities was the way they view community engagement, particularly for those organizations that we were focused on, seemed to be a little bit more skeptical than what we heard from some other communities. They felt that very often these organizations would come in and say, either one, they'll come in and say, hey, we're here to help, which is a terrible thing to say because, that's not how you start a conversation. Second of all, they would say, okay, they would come in and they would ask us questions. They would say, hey, we want your input on this. And so we would help. We would answer the questions. We'd help them out. And then they would walk away. Mm. And we would never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. And it was like we became just data points for them. We came down, we talked to them, we got some information from them, but we're not really concerned about, following up and having them actually be part of the, of what we're working on. So,
and Tina, did you notice any generational patterns in how people think or practice engagement? I mean, there's been a lot written and studied recently about younger generations and how they are reacting to the current political climate. And that's that's stimulating some activity that wasn't there before. But did you see anything generationally going on in this county?
Well, I think what's really interesting is that across the generations, people are engaging, right? Mm. So it doesn't matter if you're young, if you're old, if you're somewhere in the middle. People are trying to find ways that they can contribute to their community. And what I think it's really interesting what Tom just said, it's communities. We like to think of ourselves as Syracuse, as Onondaga County, but within that, there are multiple communities. Mm. So people across the generations are engaging. I think the tools that people use to engage are sometimes different. So we might find younger people using more digital tools, smartphones, technology to engage, where you might not see that in older generations. And perhaps older generations are more engaged in those face-to-face kind of conventional participatory practices. So that difference is interesting. But the point is that across ages, people are engaging and they're looking for ways to have a meaningful voice.
So one big sort of elephant in the room kind of question on a report like this, given the fact that it's coming out now, is you conducted this study over the past year. We've been living in what is now being called the age of Trump. But certainly, you know, the election and then the presidency of Donald Trump has catalyzed a lot of political activity. So how did studying this now, do you think, did that complicate your effort to kind of get a read at something maybe more permanent, again, indicated by the infrastructure in the title, something more permanent that's going on here in this area?
I don't know how much of an impact it had. You know, first of all, obviously, a lot of what we were talking, what we were looking at and talking about was very locally centric. And I suspect... I don't have any data, unfortunately. We didn't get any data to say, okay, are you more or less involved because of what's happening in Washington? I think that the constant drumbeat we're hearing from the media about what's happening in Washington may get people to just start thinking more about, hey, you know, what's going on in politics? What's going on in, you know, with these organizations? But I don't know if, for at least for our study, if it had that much of an impact.
Hmm. What are your thoughts, Tina, on that?
I think that's true, that perhaps because we were looking at a more localized environment, we didn't see that. But we also weren't looking exclusively at political participation. Mm. And I think had we framed it as political participation, we would have seen a lot more polarization and division. I think one of the things that comes out in this report very clearly, though, is that people, again, regardless of generation and regardless of their ideology, care about issues in their community. People care about homelessness. People care about education. People care about crime and policing, regardless of their ideology. And so I think because we were centered on those local issues, some of that polarization we didn't necessarily see here.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Tina Nabachi and Tom Carlin from the Onondaga Citizens League, and we're discussing the league's new report on community engagement in the Syracuse area. Tina, before the break, you were again making the point that people from all across different generations and different interests are engaged and want to do something about a variety of different challenges that the community is facing. So it was sounding like a pretty healthy picture you were painting in terms of engagement. I wanted to try to get both of you to make more of a sort of up or down kind of ruling on this. How healthy would you say that Syracuse's overall level of community engagement is? Are we in a good place, bad place, place of concern?
I think we are in a decent place, but we could be in a much better place. And I think this is a challenge that we're seeing across communities. So stepping a little bit away from the report and on broader research, we have this kind of curious case of the 21st century citizen now. People are more informed. They're more engaged. They have more opportunities to connect than they ever have before. At the same time, there's an incredible skepticism. There's distrust of the public problem solvers. So people are working together to solve problems in private and coming together, as we see over and over in this report. But a lot of distrust of the more official, more institutional ways of participation. So I think in Syracuse, we need to start addressing some of those challenges, building more direct connection and influence into things. I think we have to start connecting our networks and our organizations so that we can address some really critical challenges that we have, not just in Syracuse, but in Onondaga County more largely.
Well, let me push a little harder on that. Mm-hmm. You know, when Syracuse always is compared to other cities of similar size, and if you look at, you know, economic issues or in-migration versus out-migration, other kinds of things, the city often doesn't look so great in comparison to other cities of similar sizes. I noticed in your report you do make reference to good practices elsewhere. Do either of you have kind of a general read of where Syracuse sits in terms of community engagement relative to other cities of about the same size?
I think that's a tough one, right? I mean, and one of the challenges of doing any kind of research on civic engagement, on public participation, on community engagement is really getting the data out there to do the comparisons. I think when we look at it, one of the things that stands as this huge potential for Syracuse is the number of our civic assets. We have an unbelievable number of civic assets in the greater Syracuse area, from our community organizations, our nonprofit organizations, our universities, our hospitals, all sorts of civic clubs and associations. And I think that sets us apart from other places of similar size. I think one of the challenges we have here is that there's almost an atomization of all of those civic assets. And that is different from places of similar size who have had to, by necessity, kind of draw those networks together, draw and build those connections between all of the organizations.
Well, I'll ask the question this way then. Is there, did either of you see something when you were doing the work on this report from someplace else where you said, wow, that's really neat that that is happening in place X. Here's something that's really cool. Anything stand out in that way?
Yeah, we did see, you know, individual initiatives at other locations that were looked really, really cool. You know, again, it was one of those things where, okay, you know, they're doing that over there. Could we import that into here or something similar? I think that that's one of those things there that, you know, our study isn't, you know, isn't designed to say, okay, this is what we have to do. This is, you know, our study is, okay, here's what we can do. Here's what we saw, and here's what we could do. And, you know, we're always hopeful that when our study gets finished and gets published, that, you know, someone else will pick it up and, you know, and run with it. And so that's our primary goal, is to get people to follow up with this report.
And on that, I wanted to circle back. Actually, I meant to say something earlier when you were, in a sense, sort of lowering the expectations for the report, saying, oh, we only had 8 months, right, and we're a small organization. But these reports that come out every year have had quite a big impact on the communities, depending on what the year in the report is. And this may be another one, but, you know, there's been reports on I-81 and a host of other important issues, transportation issues and so on. So, Tina, what do you think are the biggest challenges for community engagement? I mean, you've mentioned the need for, again, the infrastructure here and to build the connections and to make it more permanent and ongoing. But are there other challenges that Syracuse in particular you think faces in terms of thinking about community engagement, community participation?
I don't know if the challenges we face here are different than the challenges faced other places, but I think figuring out who gets to participate and how we get to them to the table, that participant recruitment is a challenge for participatory community civic engagement exercises all around the world. In Syracuse, that may be exacerbated by some of the demographic and socioeconomic status challenges we have here in divisions. But still, that challenge of participant recruitment, how we use the information that people give to us during these events, how much we incorporate their input into final decisions and actions is a challenge. And I think communicating back to the public after engagement has been done, how do we tell them how their input has been used, what the or not used, and what the consequences of that are? I think those are some challenges that we have, not just in Syracuse, but everywhere.
And Tom, you mentioned before the when you were talking about different communities and specific communities within Syracuse and their experiences of having folks come in and then engaging them and then leaving, and they felt like they were a data point. What other kinds I guess where I'm getting at with this is, when you were doing the report itself, did you encounter a similar kind of suspicion, or did you have times in which you had difficulty getting cooperation from the folks that you were trying to get information from?
I can't speak for every one of the subcommittees and how well they interacted with their constituencies, of the people they were talking to. I know that in the study sessions that I took part in and the communities that I talked to, we didn't have that much. No, I think we made a conscious effort not to simply walk in and say, you know, knock on their door and say, hey, you know, give us some information. Mm. We quickly learned that doesn't work. So I think we made attempts to create a relationship. You know, what I say is, you know, you have to create a relationship before you actually engage. Mm. And so if you can create that relationship, then it makes everything a lot easier and more likely to succeed.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guests are Tom Carlin and Tina Nabachi from the Onondaga Citizens League. Also, Tom, and actually for both of you on this one, I'd asked before about, you know, things you saw in other cities that really you thought were interesting and useful, innovative. Did you have a moment in doing this report where you encountered a group or an individual or a practice that was going on and you said, God, that is something that's really, really great about Syracuse that, you know, you didn't know about before? It's a moment of I guess, positive epiphany about our community engagement for either of you?
Yeah, I think, one of the things, you know, you were talking earlier about you know, younger people and how they engage. And I think that was one of the biggest eye openers for me, at least, was that, you know, the organizations that, you know, the people under 30 or under 40 have started, and, you know, they simply had this idea. They took it, they ran with it. In our report, we mentioned the tiny homes initiative.
Oh, Andrew Lynette.
Yeah, Andrew Lynette.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
You know, that kind of thing that just, you know, here's somebody who's, what, you know, I don't know if he's even 30 yet. But, you know, he's this young guy and, you know.
Graduate of the Maxwell School. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
And he comes up with this idea. And I know from, you know, from talking to him that, you know, they experienced some, you know, some significant setbacks.
Yes.
But they persevered. And, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of initiative was very heartening. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, you stole my answer there, Tom. Yeah, because I think the interviews with the millennials that we did and some of the work that they're doing, those were just inspiring and really very hopeful. One other thing that shocked me was just how much interest there was in this topic to begin with. So I study public participation. I'm nerdy about that. I think it's the best. But when the proposal came to the board rallied right behind the idea of looking at community engagement. And then as the word got out, so many people came out. The steering committee got huge, and people started really coming with a lot of vested interest. And that was surprising to me. I was shocked at how much people cared about the state of community engagement here. I think that's a really hopeful thing.
Well, let me return at the end here. We've got a few minutes left, but I want to come back in and drill down more on the recommendations that the study makes. And you've already described the need for more of an infrastructure to make it more permanent, ongoing, interconnected. So how does that get created? Who is going to create this? Do you have an idea that there will be one group that already exists that kind of takes that ball and does that? Or how's that going to work?
We're hoping. I mean, I don't think we want to, you know, reinvent the wheel here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have enough, as Tina mentioned, you know, we have hundreds of organizations in Central New York. And I think we have enough really well-intentioned, you know, people running these organizations that, yeah, we could create some kind of umbrella organization and out of, so, you know, several different organizations that are already existing. And I think we already have certain ones that are moving in that direction. They realize that, you know, that they see the fragmentation we've talked about. Mm-hmm. They see how, you know, you get duplication of efforts and you get, you know, these organizations that, you know, somebody gets all ticked off at somebody who's in their organization. So they decide, okay, I'll start off and go off and start my own, basically doing the same thing. It's like, you know, so they understand that if you really want to be productive and efficient, you know, you need this kind of coordination. So I believe that there are organizations that are going to be able to put this together.
Yeah, there are a number of organizations who have community engagement as one of part of their core mission, and I think bringing them together will be great. I think we can also leverage a number of other assets we have in the community. We should be training people how to facilitate. A lot of people would like to do something different for their public meetings, but don't necessarily have those skills of participatory design or engagement design or how to facilitate. And there are places here in Syracuse where we can start doing some of that training to really, I think, build a roster of community members who can be helpful for this. I think in government, we could start thinking about how do we build participation commissions that might advise different groups or different policymaking bodies on what are the best ways to engage with this particular community, because what works in one place is not necessarily going to work in another. So we need to think through some of those design challenges. And I think there are a number of opportunities for that.
We've got enough time for you to make a plug for PARC on that facilitation piece. If you'd like to do so, go ahead. Briefly.
I would love to.
Yeah, go ahead.
So PARC is the Program for the Advancement of Research on Conflict and Collaboration. It's a long name, so we just go by PARC for short.
Sister Institute of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute,
right.
One of the institutes in the Maxwell School.
PARC and Campbell have worked together a lot on different public engagement initiatives, but we have a lot of expertise in the building around facilitation, participatory design, conflict resolution, managing public meetings. And I think that we could be a huge asset for our local civic organizations, our nonprofits, our government agencies on these issues.
And the final note, obviously, is where should people go if they want to find this report? I assume it's on the League's website. Do you want to give some directional information there?
If you go on the Onondaga Citizens League website, I think it's OnondagaCitizensLeague.org.
Or you can just Google Onondaga.
Right, just Google it.
Yeah, right.
And, and you'll see, you know, they'll be able to link there for reports, and it is there as a PDF. You can download it, you can print it. Or if you want to get a hold of us, you can get a hold of us. We'll give you a hard copy.
That would be great. And I just want to take the last few seconds at the end to, on behalf of the community, thank both of you and the League for producing these reports over the years. And this looks like another important one for the community. That was Tina Nabachi and Tom Carlin. And again, you can find that report on the community engagement in the Syracuse area on the Onondaga Citizens League webpage. Tom, Tina, thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.